Confederacy and the Wendat. We also recognize the enduring presence of all First Nations, Métis, and Inuit people. So thank you everyone for coming. We'll get into the approval of the agenda and the approval of our minutes for March 2nd, but I did want to take a moment to sort of, A, number one, say I hope everyone is well and that people are being able to cope in unprecedented times and being careful to care for themselves and for others. And I guess I wanted to extend that also to staff in particular, who are probably spending lots of sleepless nights wondering how they're going to get a system of this size up and running into virtual learning instantaneously. So I did want to say sort of a reminder to all of us that we have no idea what's in each person's life tonight and what else is on their plate and what people have been living with through these last few weeks. And that I just wanted to remind everybody that sometimes we may be feeling tired and particularly frustrated because of our own situation. And then we have other things on top of that, and that would mean staff and also members. So let's just try and be mindful that some of us are anxious and exhausted and that we're gonna be sensitive while still also simultaneously getting information and sharing ideas so our kids have the best possible outcome out of the situation. And I know that's all our collective goal. I'm just reminding everybody to be mindful that we don't know what else is in somebody else's life at this time, if that's okay with everybody. So we'll go on to the norms. So the norms, now that we're sort of online, here's how we're going to kind of run, because it's a lot of people and it doesn't flow easily in conversation when there's a lot of people online. So if you look at our agenda on the right, it starts off by reminding us to place the microphone on mute. So if you're not speaking, to turn it off. And that's at the bottom. So if you scroll again, your mouse at the bottom and your cursor, the microphone icon will appear. And if you click that, it will have a line through it to indicate that it's off. So when you're not speaking, please turn it off so we can hear others. Please keep the camera, which is on the other side of the telephone. So there's the microphone, the telephone, and the little video camera. Keep it off at all times. It helps with the streaming. And then after each agenda item, we're going to stop and have a question and answer period with staff. So if you look on the left of the agenda, it says TDSB updates remote learning, and it says ministry information, staff, professional learning support, etc. So after each bullet point, we'll stop to have questions on that topic. If you have a question after someone has been talking or even while someone is talking, you can indicate through the chat feature that you want to speak, and you would put an X. And once you type the X in, it will record your name. And it's a little bit like virtually putting your hand up, so that identifies the speakers list. And then we'll call on you to speak in turn. So the chat feature is in the top right corner of the screen. You'll see little people. It'll tell you there's 28 people in here. So you'll see little bodies at the top right with 28. And then beside that, you'll see a little speech bubble with what looks like lines or text in it. That's the chat feature. So that's what we will be using to do questions. And then lastly, you can post your comment there also. So if you don't feel like you need to actually say your comment out loud, you can type in a comment and everyone will be able to read it. And that would indicate that Diane or I would not be asking you to speak if you type a whole statement in. We'll presume that is your comment. But if you wanted to make the comment, then you will type an X and then the comment will be made. Does that make sense for everyone? I guess using the chat, if that's okay. If someone says no or dissent or needs help with that, please type so now, and then we won't go through the affirmation. We'll just go through anybody who needs help with that or disagrees. Great, okay. So then moving along, we'll go to the approval of the agenda. So I guess, do I need somebody, staff, to type in that they approve the agenda? Staff?
any member, they can type it or say it if they want to approve the agenda.
Okay, so Paul has typed that I move we approve the agenda. Julie Diamond has, I believe, seconded it. So anyone in dissent, please indicate now. Okay, so the approval of the agenda has been moved. We now have the approval of minutes from March 2nd. Could someone please type that we move to accept the minutes? Or register a concern? Okay, Olga's saying she's approved the minutes from March 2nd.
Yeah.
Abstentions? Is anyone willing to second? Aileen, thank you for seconding. Okay, is there anyone that wants to not accept the minutes?
Right, and you can send it to me as a text message.
Okay, so then the minutes are now approved from March 2nd. So I believe we're on to staff report.
I think there might be someone not muted. Okay, well, some background noise. Is that you, Olga?
Tomorrow, she can take a picture of it and text it to Nora.
Oh, it's not you. It's
okay. Then we'll figure out how to get it to you.
Okay.
You should be
able to.
You're the only one showing you're not showing your mic. That's why I'm wondering if it's you.
Okay.
And Tanya, maybe too.
I will. Okay. Thanks, I'll love
you. No, I just unmuted to say that you can see who's not muted by by looking at the participant list. But I
am also. I was you. Yeah. So it looked like the only person I saw was Olga. That wasn't, and myself, obviously. So.
And before Kathy starts with the ministry information, for those who joined late, please read the norms so that you can follow along in regards to camera off and mic off. Thank you.
Okay, I guess we'll pass it off to staff.
Okay, thanks, Nora. Thanks, Diane. Hi, everyone. It's Kathy. This has been an unbelievable last 3 weeks. The amount of learning, the pace has been relentless. The sense of urgency to get an entire system the size of TDSB in a place of transition has been unbelievable. And I think Nora used the word unprecedented times. I think this is really the first time in my career where I've felt my work life and my personal life colliding. And there's been absolutely no escape from dealing with COVID-19 and the implications and impact. And so I really first want to thank everyone that's online, both staff and SEAC members, community members, and our agency partners, for your patience, your guidance. We are, as our director, John Molloy, has said, this is a marathon run in a million little sprints. So we feel the urgency of getting what needs to be done, and we are being as responsive and proactive as we possibly can be in light of, at times, what seems like a lack of direction from the ministry, and at other times, working within the direction of the ministry. So I'd just like to share that. Want to thank David for sending his good news out. I think sharing our good news and the highlights and the pieces, the rays of sunshine, has been actually one of the highlights for me over the past 3 weeks. We have been pushed up against a wall, all of us, including our teachers, our principals, superintendents. And every time I get an email from a superintendent, from one of their principals, or a link from something that teachers have put out to connect with students, I have been, frankly, moved to tears in some cases, but in most cases, and tears of joy, in most cases, it's absolutely what I needed to put a smile on my face. So you know, when you hear of some really great news happening in schools, please share, because I think that is what we want to share and what we want to learn from. I'm just going to give a couple of ministry highlights and updates that are, we've had two really key pieces of information from the ministry. One came on Friday regarding some specifics about assessment. The other came on March 31st, which looked at how the new remote learning was going to be organized. And just so everyone understands, in TDSB, we're using the term remote learning. We've seen online, in some cases, people want to call it e-learning. This is not e-learning. The e-learning has a very specific structured approach that has a long tradition in the province of Ontario. We are using remote learning because we also know that remote learning doesn't just mean virtual online learning. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the non-digital tools and outreach that we have planned. So we're going to use the term remote learning. Couple of things just in terms of the ministry. The ministry did give us some very specific hours of expectations for student engagement. And we want to be clear that that doesn't mean FaceTime with the teacher. It is really a guideline, and I'm going to use that word really clearly, a guideline for, as the ministry has said, suggested hours per student per week. They've broken it into K to 3, 4 to 6, 7 to 8, and 9 to 12. And all of this information is on the TDSB website. So if you get questions from members of the community, please make sure that they understand that whatever we get from the ministry, we link on the TDSB website. Sometimes the ministry website's a little bit more difficult to navigate. We have been given some really clearish information about assessment and what our expectations for assessment, and that was highly anticipated because there was a little bit of a void of what that might look like. And so, as you probably know at this point, there will be a final mark, there will be a final report card for all students. Grades are based on work completed by the student up to the school closure on March 13th. And between April 6th and the end of school closures, or if school closures aren't until the end of June, then the final report card will be based on the work completed prior to March 13th. But if it is in the best interest of students to complete and to raise their mark, teachers will be able to provide students with the opportunity to do so. And during this time of school closure, remote learning, the expectation is that teachers will be engaging in formative assessment, which means meaningful feedback for students along the way with whatever work and learning that they are engaging in. We have some direction about civics and careers, because that's a half semester course for grade 10. So that's changing over. And we have some specific information about midterm marks for graduating students, because that was a worry of students and parents. And so there's an expectation that teachers will be submitting their midterm marks for grade 11 and grade 12 students so they can be submitted to college or university application center. And so I think I'll stop there and answer any questions, or if you want to wait till some other pieces and pull it all together after Angela as well. Over to you, Nora.
Right now, I don't see anyone have any questions. So is there anyone on the committee that has questions regarding assessment and reporting? So seeing no questions, I suggest we're going to move on to Bullet number two, staff professional learning and support.
Okay, great. Thanks, Nora. So I hope all of you are taking good care of yourselves. I echo Kathy's sentiments and I'm grateful to staff and families who are patient and supportive in getting us through this each sprint during this marathon. I like that, Kathy. I like that analogy. So I'm going to ask Nora to stop presenting so I can put up mine. Leanne?
Yeah, just a sec.
Thank you. So in a moment, I will navigate you through the TDSB external site where you will see what we've provided for teachers and support staff, as well for families with several remote professional learning opportunities and resources to set both staff and students for success. So let me now call this up. Okay, so do you all, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Can everyone? Oh, yeah. Okay, so, okay, great. So this is the external site. When you go, this is what you'll see. And so we have the remote learning and TDSB resources. This is referring, Kathy referred to whatever the ministry sends us, we upload here. And can you also see my mouse move?
Yes.
Good. And then there's the mental health and well-being resources. This box here, we're still working with IT, so it will say remote learning resources and supports for educators and families. So again, thank you for your patience. We're trying to work through this as best we can. So this will also include the word family.
So Angela, if I could jump in just to the, that main page. As I said, we are working at really quickly to make adjustments and improvements as we go. So this look of the homepage really got us through that transition period from the time of school closures to the continuation of learning today. The web team is working now to reconfigure that, knowing that the remote learning that Angela just showed, that button that's being updated to include in families, will get a larger presence on the homepage. So it'll be easier to find and click on to then get into some of the resources that our educators have access to. Thanks, Angela.
Thank you. And so once you do click on that remote, you'll see these three green buttons. So the professional learning and information webinar, when you click that, you can see the different professional learning and webinar sessions that are being offered to our staff. And again, staff includes teachers and support staff. So ministry webinars and the TDSB webinars. And so here are a list of topics. I won't read them all, but you can see it's a really good start for our staff. And then
just as we're doing this showing of the website, unfortunately, David is not going to be able to follow along with that. So people will need to describe what they're indicating and pointing to.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to go back then to the webinars. So there is ministry webinars and TDSB webinars. And so examples would be assistive technology to read and write gold, creating announcements, how to use the Brightspace platform, how to use Google Meet, and how to access virtual library to resources for both secondary and elementary. Okay, I'm now moving into the next tile, which is office hours, just so that you're aware for our staff. If they have questions, they can come to a virtual office. And so if you have questions, for example, with assistive technology as it relates to Read and Write Gold, you'll have different dates and different times where you can drop in and ask your questions and get real-time responses. It's sort of what we're doing now, a Google Meet. Okay, I'm now exiting this tile and moving to the third tile, which is called Resources. When you click that tile, you'll notice there are six more tiles, and each tile has a different topic. So the first one is Elementary Educator Resources K-8. If you click on that, you'll have resources for every for grades kindergarten to grade 8. That's your elementary resource. And then let me just, I hope I don't get up. Yeah, good. And then you have your secondary tile. Once you click that on, again, you have your resources for grades 9 to 12. There's a toolkit for selecting equitable and culturally relevant and responsive resources. And it's broken down into curriculum strands. So arts, English, business studies, French, and so on. We also have a tile called Building Critical Consciousness. And again, there's different links for resources that both teachers and support staff can access, which really, again, taps into the equitable CRRP. We have Urban Indigenous Education resources. We have ESL resources. And we also have special education. So I'm going to click in the special education tile. And what you'll see once you click that tile are several tiles that are labeled the following. So we have curriculum resources, and underneath it, alternate curriculum resources. We have setting routines, which is a very brief PowerPoint to help set the stage of how to set a successful routine. We have some community supports for our families to link into. Each community resource is a live link. Right. So each one is a live link from Hall and Blurview, Toronto Public Library, Easter Seals, so on and so forth. So everything is a live link so that you can just click on and get information on that. We have literacy, the second row, we have literacy, numeracy, blind, low vision, and deaf and hard of hearing resources. We have some STEM resources. And again, these are apps that they can use. Okay, so that's what it will look like. So what I'm looking at are the icons of the apps and a brief description of what they can offer. And then the last row of tiles, we have assistive technology, sensory well-being, and staff, special education support staff resources. And I do want to go into that. So what you've seen so far are resources that our families can use. This one is for staff, open with. And it's actually really exciting what our teachers are doing. Just hope this comes up. So let's go. All right. So one of the great things that our teacher, I don't know what I just did there. What our teachers are doing is creating a Google Plus community. And so what a Google Plus community, it's a platform which provides access to resources. It allows the teachers from common exceptionalities to come together. So you'll notice ASD, LI, MID. So teachers who have the same interest coming together to share resources and exchange ideas. And so this community will also talk a little bit about how to support students with IEPs, assistive technology, and each community is moderated by a TDSB special education and inclusion coordinator or consultant. So far the take has been positive. A lot of people are logging on into this. We also, of course, they can always connect with their special education and inclusion consultant. Networks for Learning is also a group of teachers who come together to similar to what we're doing on Google Meet, and connecting with each other, having conversations, what's working, what's not working. How do you support this challenge that I'm experiencing? So again, it's done in real time where they're really coming together, sharing resources and finding strategies and solutions to support students and families. And then of course we have these resources that they can share. So let's go back out. And so the last thing I want to share about this, because really I'm doing both staff professional learning and family support resources together. I know they're two separate bullets. But one thing to notice is that, so these are all digital. I do want to share that in regards to non-digital, there is a team working on creating non-digital learning packages that are inquiry-based per grade levels for families who have requested them through the teacher or their principal. The resources are in the process of being finalized and then sent to central printing, and then will be delivered to the student's home to get the students started. And the next phase of that is teachers and support staff will create more specific non-digital resources that are specific to students' IEPs and learning strengths. So it's interesting to note, though, that as we're doing this through the equity lens, we do acknowledge that, you know, you heard me say we'll deliver it to their home. We do acknowledge that some of our families don't have permanent addresses and are in shelters due to homelessness. And so we do have teams working diligently, seeking ways to contact the families to ensure that both their academic and well-being needs are being met as much as possible. So I think those are that's pretty much it in regards to the supports that we're providing both teachers, support staff, and families in regards to remote learning. So I'll open it up to any questions or if anyone else on the team wants to add.
I think Julie is on first. Julie?
Hi, Angela. I'm just wondering, I saw the number of platforms that it looks like your staff's going to be using. And I guess I'm just wondering, is there going to be consistent, you know, across all elementary schools, they're going to be using this platform, or is it kind of just up to the schools to choose what their teacher is using?
Angela, so can I jump in on that one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks, Julie. And I wanted to jump in because we're actually trying to work through this. So before school closures, we know there's a lot of teachers that educators are using many different platforms, virtual platforms with their class through kind of blended learning platforms to allow for parents to engage with student work and provide, you know, feedback and comments. So what we want to make sure is we're not stopping teachers who are comfortable with certain platforms because, as we've said from the outset, this is really stressful times and that we don't want to pull a rug out from anybody right now. So we are allowing multiple platforms if a teacher is comfortable using something in the past. The two platforms that the board is supporting are Google Classrooms and Brightspace. And so all of those links that Angela walked us through are linked to either a Google Classroom app or extension or a Brightspace app or extension. And so those are the two platforms that we're providing professional learning in and support to teachers. The other platforms that teachers may choose to use because they've always used them, we are not providing the support, the technical support or any of the training in.
Okay.
I hope that addresses
it, Julie. No, that's great. And I'm glad to hear that too. Just, you know, that they have the choice and kind of not disrupting that. I think that make it, you know, a lot easier for students and teachers to kind of continue that. Okay, great. Thanks.
Aline? Aline had a question? Can you hear me? Yeah, I'm on.
Yes, sorry. I'm just trying to test out the modules, and I felt that some of the modules that within the special education tile requires permission. For instance, the staff special education support is for staff only. I think Kathy has already answered that, but I was going into the literacy, the numeracy, and STEM alternative alternate curriculums that also requires permission.
So you're saying you can't get into these?
Yeah.
Everything that Angela walked you through, although on the public website, we're walking you through. We thought SEAC would be interested to see what resources are being made available for teachers. So teachers can use them. Once a teacher actually goes into the resource, they will download and have public access for their kids. So one of the things that we want to stress, and we actually have some help, like a help desk for students. Students need to be signed in using their TDSB login. And again, there's some protection there. Many of the resources, we have license agreements with the companies. And so we are working, in some cases, we're working within the license agreement. And one of the license agreement is you have to be within the TDSB firewall. And then it's completely open access to our students and our staff. Anything that we're making available to parents, we're ensuring that parents do not have to be within a TDSB account, that it'll be wide open access. So when we'll make sure that on the tiles, it's going to be really clear that these are parent or family resources and what educator resource.
Yeah, and I also just saw, thanks, Kathy, I just saw the, please note, some of the contents of this page are intended for TDSB staff members and require TDSB login and password to access. That. Got it. Thank you.
No, Nora.
Great. Thank you. So along the same idea, so I went to the alternative curriculum area and it says I needed to be staff. So I guess my questions were about students who are on alternative curriculum and whose assessment is going to have to be driven through observation, or traditionally would be driven through teacher observation of the student's demonstration of tasks. How are you going to continue to support families with alternative goals and assess things that normally you would watch kids do?
Hi, Nora, thanks. Let me just make sure my mute's not off. So I think what the goal is that teachers with support staff will continue to collaborate in regards to what are those IEP goals that need to be met and how we can accommodate them during these remote learning scenarios that we find ourselves in. Collaboration also with the families to see what works best in regards to the students' routine during the day, because we don't want to replicate the classroom and the hours. And so that becomes the conversation that happens between the staff members and the parent. and what the student is able to do during this different time and the different routine that he or she is on. So each case will be taken individually through conversation between staff and parents.
So does that mean that the student, the teacher will be changing the IEP based on the conversation when they call home? Or how are you going to record what may potentially shift very much away from what was happening at school because the family's priority is something completely different?
I think right now we're trying to ensure that wellness is at the forefront first and foremost. So the parents are being contacted to see what is doable, what can we do in regards to both digitally or non-digitally. So what routines can be set and how can the school meet the student where they're at under these circumstances? So if something needs to be tweaked in the IEP, then that's a conversation. We're trying to support what's in the IEP through the lens of remote learning. So what can we do to support the learning based on what we have now? So I know it sounds like a very general answer, but what we're telling our principals is for students who are on alternate curriculum or IEPs, it really becomes a conversation with the family, with the teacher, to ensure that the needs are being met as best as possible through these remote conditions.
Okay, I guess I just wanted to, I will leave it. I guess I just wanted to know if those conversations were going to be documented. Is there going to be messaging that says they're going to call on a consistent basis, just because it is going to be so conversational?
And that's something where you can connect with the principal to say, you know, what is the plan in regards to communication. Is it weekly? Is it biweekly? Is it daily? As the teacher connects with students. So that's where we're saying it really is unique to each student. And parents are encouraged to have those conversations with teachers as teachers try to, contact the families. One of the barriers is that it's difficult to contact the families. For those who don't have the email or telephones that are working, we're trying to find different ways to contact the family to ensure that the student's well-being is, again, first and foremost, okay, and then focusing on the learning aspect.
Thanks.
Okay. David's next.
Hi, tell me if you can hear me.
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Hi, everybody. Hope everybody's safe. I want to begin by expressing all of our gratitude to Kathy, Angela, Leanne, everybody who's dealing with unbelievable circumstances and having to stay sane during that. We're all hugely indebted to you guys and all of your teams. I want to ask a few questions, and because my participation through this technology is extremely hard, I'm going to do it all at once and then try to lay low pretty much for the rest of the meeting unless I have to. The first thing I want to do is I'm eager to know, the government last week announced that they want to have schools providing distance learning. I want to know what resources they've provided and direction regarding ensuring that students with disabilities can fully participate. In other words, you folks are having to invent a lot of things. I want to know how much of it is being left to you to invent and how much they've given you. So that's the first thing. The second thing I'm eager to know is, are the schools going to be letting kids with disabilities have their adaptive tech brought home? If they've got braille displays or other technology that normally they're not allowed to bring home, are they allowed to, is it going to be provided to them? I know you've talked about there's been talk about providing iPads and so to people who can't do distance learning because they don't have any computer at home. I'm talking about the adaptive tech, which has existed, but had to be at school. The third thing I want to know about is what is being done to ensure that the digital content and avenues that are being used for home learning or remote learning through school is assured to be accessible. From what I can see of this app we're using right now, it isn't. I can't find a button to do chat on my phone at all. I think you warned me about that. I will tell you, I've used Zoom a lot. I'm using it tomorrow morning, as I think you folks will know. I invite you all to attend. We're doing a major public forum on what should be done in a million areas, including education, during the COVID crisis. And Zoom is extremely accessible. If the TDSB is using, I'm interested to know how accessible items are, the systems are they're using, and what they're doing to ensure the creation of digital content. We've had problems with that at TDSB. We've spoken about it at meetings before. It's now indispensable because we don't have students with an SNA beside them who can help them figure out what something says if it's in an inaccessible format. And the last thing I want to ask about is there are a lot of students with disabilities who need an SNA or an EA. It's not just a matter of saying, you know, here's the iPad or here's the TV or here's the laptop, watch and talk and take part. They need an EA to help facilitate their participation. And I realize we're all in this wholly new, unexpected world. So I'm not being critical at all. I'm identifying a need, and I'm wondering what TDSB is looking to do to enable students who need that facilitation so they can participate in distance learning or online learning, whatever you want to call it. So those are the major things. And I'm eager for any suggestions of what would help you folks at TDSB. Because if the province were to do it, because one of the things I'm going to be saying at our public policy forum tomorrow morning is that 71 school boards shouldn't be left to reinvent the wheel of how to deal with this for students with disabilities. It's the outer edge of the final frontier that you folks are in. And so if there are areas where you're not getting guidance or supports or resources that would help you, it would be helpful to know. And I'm not saying that in the way of criticism of the province. We know that they're all dealing with a crisis and pulling stuff out of the air is, you know, under the same timelines you are. But we would like to focus our asks on priority things that would help you. So I'm eager to know from anyone around the table or from staff. I'm going to mute my microphone now. And thanks again.
Thanks, David. It's Kathy. I can address, I think I've got all the questions. So let's start with the ministry direction and support. I started out by saying we've received some direction. We've received very few details. There's acknowledgement that we need, that teachers, educators need to make sure that we consider students with special education needs with their IEP goals, what's been laid out in terms of their IPRCs. But we have not received much more direction from the ministry than that. And we have actually put in calls to ensure that they are hearing our cries for more specifics. So just in terms of the ministry, I would say that is an area where we're anticipating more direction from not so much the politicians, but the people that work at the ministry. Up to now, we haven't received a lot other than just the general expectations of educators working as a team. So that's to your first question. The SIA equipment, the adaptive equipment, Angela can talk in more detail about that. That was one of our major mountains to move, to identify all of the students that had personalized SIA equipment those that needed access to laptops, Chromebooks with more of the generic software that's uploaded, and those that have very personalized adaptive equipment. We've identified the students by reaching out specifically to through principals and to parents. And we had teams going into schools on the weekend to retrieve the personalized equipment, and they will be delivered via Purolator to homes. The generic laptops are getting imaged with the software that's needed, the assistive technology, and they're getting delivered to the homes where students had not brought them home prior to March break. And like I said, that really was a major undertaking. That went along with, we had 22,000 identified students, identified with special education needs, but students across the TDSB that were without a device at home. And then we had about 2,000 students with special education needs that needed access to their device. So you can imagine what that's been like to get those devices back into their hands. The accessible tech, I'm going to take it back. This is why we always appreciate CX feedback. I have been told that Google Classroom and Brightspace is all AODA accessible, accessible for in terms of being able to access it independently. So I will take that back and just double check and make sure. The issue around Zoom, I chuckle a little bit because Zoom has become a hot button among educators because there's some, as I said before, some teachers have been using Zoom for a while now and really love it. Federations are not endorsing Zoom. Many districts across North America, as well as the city of Toronto, are not endorsing Zoom because of privacy issues. So as I said at the beginning, we're not telling people not to use it. We are giving them warnings about the issues around privacy and explaining to them the features of Zoom that most teachers like is being able to see their class in a grid pattern so that you can see every child all at once. Those features are also part of the two platforms, the video conferencing platforms within the virtual learning environment. So we're helping teachers migrate over to those, and we're giving them really specific instructions of how to use the video conferencing aspects if that's what they choose to use. And then your point about the SNA and EA, and I might ask Angela or Janine to comment, we are working on communication directly to SNAs and EAs and what our expectations are. We have communicated with principals that a classroom team, whether you're within the bricks and mortar or whether you're online and remote. But what that looks like, we are still working on that, and we're actually hoping to hear some best practice from our educator teams so we can share those best practices. And those Google communities that Angela talked about earlier, we're hoping that we'll learn through those Google communities and be able to share widely across the system. But we absolutely are looking for any feedback in that area, because that truly is uncharted territory, and we need to learn how to do it.
Great. Nora, I lost the chat. I had to log out and come back in. So the person I see here is Aline. She has a question, but I don't know if there's anybody before her.
There was. So hold on a second. Sorry. Yeah. Let me scroll back up. I just had to unmute for a moment. David, did you have a follow-up question now that was still on this topic?
Yeah, it's David. Let me just, that answer is really helpful. And if you think of anything else tonight, email me, because any other ideas, I'm happy to unattributably pepper tomorrow if I can, because we're trying to get provincial action on this. Let me tell you this, with respect to the digital accessibility, just two or three things really fast. Number one, if they've told you something's AODA compliant in the digital world, it means nothing because the AODA standards were written 10 years ago. And so what we need for accessibility now is not just compliant with what was required in 2011. I mean, this mobile app I'm using right now does not have an accessible chat feature. The AODA standards don't even deal with mobile device apps because they didn't exist in 2010 when those things were being enacted in 2011. So AODA standard is not the standard. It's accessibility is the standard. I don't know what the privacy issue is with Zoom any more than anything else, but the first thing is it should be an accessible platform. And if they're using Google Meets, unless I'm missing something, and I could be, and there may be stuff that should be turned on that's just not on here, but if it lacks accessibility, forgive me, they should not be using it, period. They should use an accessible platform, period. And the final thing is accessibility in the digital environment isn't just the app. It's also the digital content that teachers are sending home for students to work on and so on. This is something that we brought a motion on four years ago, June. And we really, it's a problem that's been out there, but it's now come home to roost in a serious way because we've now moved to the digital environment. So there needs to be a really proactive strategy at TDSB to make sure teachers know if they're creating documents to go home, that they've got to be accessible documents. And that's the issue I'm just raising with you at large. Anyway, I don't want to take up too much more time, but I do invite everybody to log on to our event tomorrow morning at 10.
David, if I may, it's Kathy. Thanks for that.
Sure.
One of the things that we are aware of, just in terms of that digital accessibility, and you mentioned that you're on your phone, we knew that some of our students actually, when we asked, do you have a device, and some said, yeah, we've got a phone, so we're good. That's why we said, you know what, phones won't work in some of these virtual environments, and that's why we thought it was critical to get the device, whether it be a Chromebook or a laptop, in their hands. So I'm agreeing with your point about it. The tool, the app, and the content all, you know, come together in terms of digital accessibility. So I'm taking it back, but we are aware that on some of the phone functionalities aren't there. And that's why with our kids with special education, we're ensuring they're getting either a Chromebook or their own laptop delivered to their house. But I'll take the other pieces back.
Okay, so
it's Isabella, I think, actually, Diane.
So I just want to make sure I lost the initial chat list, and
it's Isabella. Isabella would be next.
Okay, as long as you, okay.
Yep, I've got back. It's Isabella.
Perfect. Thanks. I did. I guess you can hear me now. Okay, great. Sorry, I for whatever reason this kept on disconnecting me. And by the way, I do use Zoom. All three universities in Toronto are using Zoom for teaching, but also most recently for PhD defenses. And there are ways of actually making sure that you don't get anybody kind of doing what is called the Zoom bombing by just interfering or interrupting presentations and other things. There are ways of securing that. And it is a really good, robust application, and it's very stable. But anyways, my question actually had more to do with students who have severe and complex disabilities. And a lot of the resources that you are sharing with us, I would say, are great. But I don't know how applicable they would be, for example, to students that actually are, you know, developmentally delayed, and those who actually also have severe physical disabilities. Some of them also require equipment and assistive other devices, not only for communication, but also to help them to strengthen their muscles. And all of that all of a sudden is absent. So my question, and I guess more of a concern, is with students such as these falling behind. Because at this point, for example, many parents are not able to do what an OT can do or what a teacher who knows how to teach assistive communication with assistive devices. This is not something that parents can do or even have time to do right now. And so my question is there anything that is currently being considered to accommodate that group?
Thanks, Isabella. So I'm hearing two questions around resources for the students with DD and the equipment that's required. So in regards to the equipment piece, so teachers in their conversation with parents have been communicating. I know Kathy just talked a little bit about the C equipment piece. So teachers have been communicating with parents to see what devices their students would require. If it's something that is more specific and specialized, then we make a note of that, and we will make arrangements to have those items picked up and delivered to support the students. Again, the conversation will happen at the school to see what the equipment is, if it's a C equipment piece versus an OT, PT, and having the conversations about the usage and is it a safe equipment to have in the home, because we're hearing, again, through that equity lens, that some of the equipment can't go home. So again, in regards to equipment, the answer is yes, we're working with parents to see what equipment is required and making arrangements to support delivery of that equipment. And then again, the conversation is, what is that going to look like once it lands there? In regards to the resources for students with DD, we are communicating with our principals from our congregated sites and working with them and their staff to come up with the resources that you see on the tiles that I just shared with you. So I acknowledge the work that our principals have been doing with us in supporting the collection of resources for our students on the alternate curriculum. And we'll continue to work with them. We also have the resources that we're getting from the Google Plus community sites, communities, where, again, the resources that they're coming up with are specific to the students with those exception, with the exceptionality, and in this case would be the DD. So we are tapping into the expertise of the staff who actually work in these settings, who know the students. And the third piece I want to share is that what we put up are resources that people can use. And again, it's coming through our principals in our congregated site. But what teachers should be doing, or we're asking teachers to do, is ensure that every program that is, or material or learning task that is being sent, is individualized for that student.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I'm just going to catch up. sorry. There was a little bit of a snag on the list because I was in and out of the calls, but I believe I'm just going to tell everybody the order just so everybody knows. I'm going to do Alexander, then Richard, and then Aline. And then after that, Tanya. I believe I have everybody. So if I don't, just give me a shout on the chat, but I'll let Alexander go next.
Actually, now having said that, that was pre-COVID, post-COVID, I don't know.
You're on mute. I think you're on mute, Alexander. Do you want to go to the next person?
Sure. Okay, Alexander, while you're trying to get off mute, we'll go to Richard and then we'll go back to you once you figure
and
it out.
And also, Diane, if the question is, if Alexander can unmute, he could always write his question in the chat and we can get to him after the next person.
Perfect. Okay, so let's go to Richard. And you can unmute, Richard.
The other piece, if we're having trouble with people unmuting themselves, Leanne, as the meeting organizer, has the ability to unmute people. So we could always go to that as a next resort.
Okay. Do you want to try Leanne to unmute Alexander first before I move on?
Angela, I think you need to mute yourself. We hear background.
Okay, so maybe you could chat, Alexander or Richard. Maybe you could, if you're having trouble unmuting or we can't hear you, maybe you can give us write something in the chat so we know how to assist you.
Can we go to the next question?
So just, sorry guys, just a point.
Oh, wait, I'm Richard. That's right.
Okay. They're so sometimes when you have the chat showing, you can't see your microphone. So if you click in the black area, the chat will go away and your microphone will pop back up.
Good tip, Nora.
Yeah, let's let them have a chance to do it because it's sometimes tricky. I think Rich is trying. I don't know if Alexander's still trying, but whoever gets unmuted first can go first.
Alexander is still trying.
He's trying to unmute?
Yep.
Okay. Can you tell us the issues you're having, guys? If not, we can come back to you. Yeah, he's struggling. Why can't you hear me?
So. I think this might be because the connection is poor. I had to do that too, and I had to switch a device. So.
Oh, you did.
Can anybody hear me?
Now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. Alexander, are you on, I think. What's on a minute ago?
We can hear you. We can hear you typing, Alexander.
He can't hear either.
Hello?
Oh, there he is. Alexander?
Oh my God, I don't know. This is the worst system I've ever been on. And I've been on about 6 different systems this week.
Okay.
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
All right. Thank you. First of all, I just wanted to say, yes, it has been a monumental task. I've been listening through meetings over the last couple of weeks, and I'm absolutely boggled by the fact that people are spending 12 and plus hours in front of computers trying to get all this together. So thank you for that. I wanted to make a couple of comments. First, about the accessibility issues. I'm not quite sure what Brightspot or Google Classroom are like for accessibility. But I do realize that it has been flagged at this board that we're having even issues with getting translated material out about all of the things that are happening at the board and across the province to those families that whose first language is not English. So I mean, if we're looking at accessibility online for students, I think we have to cross our fingers and hope for the best and bring together what we can. If we can't get translated material out, that's a real issue. The other point I wanted to make was, I know Kathy mentioned something about the IPRC process. And I think this is an important point because it was brought to my attention from a constituent who asked about gifted identification and what would be happening. My understanding from the board is through a preliminary legal opinion, the IPRC process can be suspended during this emergency period, or it can be done electronically. I just wanted to make sure people are aware of that because the ministry, as far as I know, has not provided us with any guidance or direction on that yet. I could be wrong, it could have changed, but I just wanted to make sure that was there. In terms of the, I had a question about the C amounts, the special education amount. I spoke to the executive, I had an email conversation with the executive superintendent for Learning Center 2, Brendan. Everyone knows Brendan. And he had made a comment that one of the challenges is identifying need, collecting the equipment, and then getting it out. So my concern is with identifying need. I would have thought that we would have been able to identify that need either through the IEP or through the IPRCs. Is this information not readily available electronically to our teachers and to our educators and to our staff? And if not, what are we considering doing going forward?
I can address that, Alexander. To the IPRC question, we have reached out to the ministry. We're waiting for the official direction. We have shared internally that we will make some decision. We'll need to make some decisions moving forward, but we're not in the position right at the next few weeks to be doing that. And we know we'll just have to ensure that we have a process, whether it be electronic or otherwise. My guess is it'll be electronic for IPRCs. We'll ensure that our students have what they need in terms of placements for September. But perhaps we'll have some more to share as we go through April. Anyway, in terms of the SIA, I'm not sure the conversation you had with Brendan, but we did go through, we did look at IEPs. Part of our issue was that people left schools for March break not bringing any records home. And no, some didn't bring any TDSB laptops that they could access their class lists, school lists, if you're a principal. So a lot of what we had to do was through our special ed central staff, connect with principals, and we provided them with the lists of students, and they needed to connect. If they didn't know already, they needed to connect directly with families to say, ask if any of that equipment that the student has been assigned through SIA was either at home or if the student needed it. So we've done all of that work. And now we're just ensuring, as I've said, to make sure that the specialized equipment that, Kathy needs something specific, Kathy's getting her piece of equipment delivered to her house. And if a student just needed the laptop with the assistive technology apps loaded, we are doing that more in a bulk, but they will be delivered directly to the doorstep of the students that need it.
Oh, okay, thank you. In terms of the IPRC process, it would be good once we know to make sure that that gets out into the public as soon as possible. And I had one other question. This meeting being recorded, right?
Yes.
Is it available to post on something like a Facebook group so that if somebody wanted to listen in and get this kind of information, they would be able to do that?
Yeah, we're going to post it to the SIAC on the website, so it'll become available to the public after the meeting.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Great, thank you. So glad you could finally get in, Alexander. What about Richard? Are you back on or?
Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, perfect. Good.
Excellent. Thank you. Through Madam Chair, one quick question. Noting Kathy already kind of mentioned that a lot of staff had already left for spring break, didn't necessarily have classless, schoolless, or equipment with them. How does the IEP work and access to that remotely?
So, hi, Richard, it's Angela. So, Janine, I'm going to pass it on to you in regards to what teachers have access to.
Good evening, all. So at this point, parents should have a copy of their IEP that was sent home since the initial take. All teachers have access to our internal system with IEPs, so they're able to review and revisit and print out IEP summaries or share IEP summaries with other teachers who teach that particular student to look at what the goals and how best to put a plan forward to achieve those IEP goals. So I'm suspect when teachers are can contact in parents, they would probably have conversations around, particularly for those students who are accessing the alternative curriculum, what are some of those life skill goals that could be achievable in the home, such as helping to prepare breakfast or doing things at home that are pretty much some of the things that they were doing at school. For other students, some of the things that we start off with, because as you know, there's a lot of resources out there for parents as well as for teachers. So, you know, if your child is in grade 6, for example, and they're working at grade 2 level, how does a parent know what resources would be appropriate? And so some of that piece is having the conversation with the classroom teacher to share what is it in the IEP goal that we're working towards. So teachers do have access, and we're hoping that families had access because IEPs should have all been sent home in the fall. Midterm, some of them were not, but even if they're not sent home, those are certainly conversations to have with parents about how best we're supporting them.
Excellent, thank you.
Okay, I believe Aline is next, and then Tanya after her.
Hi everyone, it's me, Aline again. Just wanted to quick comment about Zoom, because at my work, I work with the vulnerable community, mainly developmental challenged disability, and also with mental health concerns. So my work, they actually sent out an email to everyone mentioning that for like external meetings and for like education, like Isabella, if it's not a one-on-one meeting, Zoom, it's okay. But besides the Zoom bomb issue, I think, and Isabella did mention that requires work to make sure it's both sides and encryption. So it's really hard to manage both sides encryption, except for the Google Meet that we're using right now that has both size and encryption. So that is an information that I'm not a technology savvy by any means, but this is something that I have from my work, and I just wanted to pass it on. Maybe there are reasons why. And I also use Hangout a lot with my smaller groups when I'm delivering workshops. So I find that is quite accessible, but I also do use Zoom as well. So that's one piece I want to, pass on. And then for consideration through Kathy and Angela, they can think about, what's the best for our community. And number two is, I want to make sure that Isabella also touched on, like, for the most vulnerable, besides needs for physical challenges, there are anxiety issues. And I know that the resources Angela shared regarding setting up a routine, that's very helpful. And I wanted to know if there's any possibility through the principal and the teacher, there could be some like video conferencing. That is that a possibility? Because that, I think it would really alleviate some of the stress that individuals that has anxiety, that they're not able to see their teachers and their support staff, like the one-on-one CYW, SNAs, EAs. So I just wanted to see if there's any thought been put into that.
Aileen, it's Kathy. I can address the video conferencing question. Right now we are working on a communication that will be going out to all of our educators, giving them some options of video conferencing. Just so you know, our federations, our OSSTF, our secondary federation, has been kind of quiet on this. The EDFO Elementary Federation has not been as quiet, and so there's some different opinions about what they're actually saying. We have not, unlike other districts across Ontario, banned live streaming or video conferencing. What we are saying to teachers is that please go ahead, please follow all of the safety guidelines. We want you to make sure that you're safe, your privacy is safe, and the kids' privacy is protected as well. And so we know that there are many of our teachers that have already used video conferencing. And when I spoke at the top of the hour, some of the examples that I've seen are the ones that have truly brought tears to my eyes, to see kids connecting with their teachers. We know that anxiety is really prevalent during this time. We know that the uncertainty of this is really weighing on many of our kids. And some of the stories that we've heard of teachers going online and actually seeing their kids, and kids, the students getting to see their teachers and their peers, where kids have broken down into tears because this is the first time in 3 weeks that they've actually been able to see their friends and their teacher. So we are, we do have some guidelines for video conferencing. We have some supports for teachers, and we are communicating that that is one way of connecting with students.
Great. Great, thank you. And Tanya, I think you're next.
Hi everyone. I also wanted to start this by sharing my gratitude for the immense amount of work. I can only imagine what it is that you've been putting together and working through over the past couple of weeks to get things ready for today. So thank you very much. And also to say that both of my kids, one is in grade 4 and the other is in grade 7, had a very successful start to their online learning. And also the one of my sons who does have a SIA claim, we were contacted both by telephone and by email in order to discuss how to share those materials if we needed them. So, you know, on a very personal level, that all seems to be working really well. So thank you so much for that. I did want to pick up on Isabella's point, and I was contacted by a couple of parents today and a couple of core teachers, core resource support teachers or special ed teachers as well. And I think the, unfortunately, what they were sharing, and I appreciate that this is a steep learning curve for everyone involved and that none of this is probably new for the TDSB staff, was just two things: that a lot of the work that it assumed a level of independence that their children or the learners didn't have. What they were experiencing today was really frustrating because it assumed a level of independence for the learner that was not there. And then the second piece is it also assumed a certain level of literacy on behalf of the parents, or a certain level of skill that they were also able to navigate. So I was just thinking, as we move forward and we learn together, it might be useful for parents and for teachers, but parents is really what I'm asking for, to have some kinds of other means of either listening in or having access to supports that are maybe not in the written form and or are very specific to students with high needs and how to support them at home. Because for students who are less able to use that technology independently, it requires a lot of effort on behalf of the parents. And that can come either through the teachers who are supporting the students or independently through the TDSB as well.
Thanks, Tanya. It's Kathy. I want to take that back. We are working on some short videos, kind of how-tos. So we'll take it back, and the team that's looking at that will try to think about how we can package that for parents as well.
Thanks, Kathy.
So we're almost there. I'm going to finish this question, then maybe we can move on, because I think Angela had a couple of some more things on the list. But I just had one question from what Tanya was talking about, independence. So that was my concern as well. Independence in not just understanding things, but assignment. And maybe you're going to get to this, I'm not sure. But I know a lot of teachers are sort of, some of them are, they're teaching in different ways, which is great. But some of them might be less instruction and giving assignments. So, and I know the expectation is maybe less so of people having to complete assignments, but my concern is those people who lack the independence. Right now, a lot of parents, it's a struggle just to get people to do homework when they're going into school, let alone when they're at home. So I just wondered if there was any thought or any support, or maybe even like what Tanya mentioned, just that flexibility so that parents can be advocates or help them through, because it's a tough time for those people, you know, and I just wondered if there was any consideration of that at all.
I'll jump in and then Angela or others can start or to add to it. We absolutely are acknowledging what you're describing, Diane, and one of our very first conversations with our union partners was around when we are designing a remote learning environment, the independence level of students, the skill level of parents, the all of those considerations have to be put on the table. And so, you know, we're going to work through this as we go, and we're going to get feedback, and we're going to, you know, respond to the feedback. So I think we'll, you know, kind of put that out there. One of the things that we were really clear about in TDSB and kind of frankly Ontario, although we did see some districts go down this route, we did not put out a schedule of the day. When the ministry came out with their hours of, you know, lack of a better term, but student engagement, when, you know, they say K to 3 is 5 hours a week, we did see from other jurisdictions that they said, you know, this is what a typical day should look like at home learning. And we said, absolutely not. We're not going there because we don't know what's happening in the home. We don't know, you know, access to the device. We don't know how much sometimes you need, you know, whoever to come home to give that kind of support. So we are trying to be proactive, and we are trying to be responsive to those needs. And so, like I said, we'll adapt and be flexible as we go when we hear more feedback.
Great. Yeah, that's great to hear. And I think, yeah, you're right. It's got to be a balance, because you want to give the flexibility, but then the people who may need the structure, you want to give them some guidance as well. So great to hear you're working through both of those, because I know it's a huge task. And again, like everybody else, I thank you for all of your work. So I think at this point, why don't we move? Arnora, are you okay with Angela continuing, just because we're at 8:26 here? Is that
good? Well, I think we've touched on a lot of the subsequent items, but if there's more, for sure. I mean, we've had EAA sort of conversations, conversations. So we've kind of been all over the place. But yeah, if Angela feels we've missed anything, the next would be like communication with a teacher in school. Believe it or not, that's where we're actually at.
Well, you can order so you want.
You're right. Thanks, Nora. So we did cover basically C equipment, so that was covered. And in regards to the support staff, I think we did mention that as well, that the staff support staff will continue to work collaboratively with teachers and principals and families to ensure that the students that they've been supporting or the programs that they've been supporting continues to be sustained remotely. And like we said, it will look different in each case. So I'm good if you want to move forward with your question, Nora.
No, I didn't really, I think, have any more questions. I just noticed that as we were speaking, we were all over all the topics below. Yeah. So I'm not sure if the committee has additional questions they feel still need to be addressed, because I think they've talked about how schools and teachers will be communicating with family. I think they've talked about how SEA equipment is going to be delivered, EAs. I think the one thing I am concerned about, and I'm sorry if I've missed it, was so families that you're unable to contact because they don't have contact information, is there like a website that would be, not a website, is there some way, are there public announcements, I don't know, where you put a place where you can call someone? I'm just thinking for the families that I literally had a year where I taught a student who lived in a car. And I'm just thinking for people who were doing that, they wouldn't have public washrooms anymore. They wouldn't have the number of things they would have lost access to. And I'm not even sure how they would begin to reach out.
So, yeah, that's one of the big challenges. And so there is a team that's working through that. I'm not on that specific team, but yep. I know there's something in place to contact those families, and they're using all their support staff and resources to figure out ways to contact them. Principals and teachers of those particular families usually have ways to connect with them, and so we're working through them to do whatever we can to support those families.
Nora, it's Kathy. I'll just add to Angela's point. We have gone to the safe arrivals list in schools, and some principals have, you know, gone into their schools to get those lists. So we've sent an email blast out. We came back and we saw the number of students that didn't have an email address. We called the numbers that were on the safe arrivals. Teachers have reached out to knowing teachers that knew, well, you know, I know I can get a hold of them through, you know, so and so. We've made connections with some of our shelter partners and shelters where we know some of our families are. So we've also had that connection through shelters to ensure that we're more groups of families or students are, that they have access to multiple devices. Obviously, you can't depend on just one. So we are narrowing the list down. We are hopeful that over the next couple of days, we will have made contact with everyone on that list. And it's been amazing. We've gone from a couple of tens of thousands to a couple of thousand to a couple of hundred. So we are narrowing it down in terms of being able to contact every single student.
That I know it's a really tough job, and I really appreciate everyone's diligence, because they'll be super at risk these days, not just from like not learning, but actual COVID, if they have home insecurity. Just on that note, I know that people have suspended having meetings outside of the provincially mandated committees, but I would argue at this juncture, an inter-city advisory committee person liaising with staff would be a good idea, since those are very unique circumstances that many people in poverty live with. And I think it's difficult sometimes for people who don't live that lifestyle to remember all the various ways this is impacting them. So I don't know if the director has considered keeping in touch with that committee in particular.
I'll take that back. I know we're doing a lot through our PIAC committee, knowing that they have connections far and wide and with every single school. They are connected with the nutrition program that we are rolling out to ensure that we have food gift cards going out to our families that are in need of food. So we are trying to cover the basis of our families that are living in poverty. So I will take it back.
Thank you. So does anyone else on the committee have any additional questions, or were you feeling that that was a lot and the staff have done an insurmountable amount of work? Like, that's Herculean effort on your part, honestly. Does anyone else have any more comments? So it's sounding as though we have moved on to this point in the agenda where we go to trustee reports. Do any of our trustees have any reports for us?
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Hi, Michelle. Is that you?
Yeah, it is. It's Michelle.
Okay, great.
Yeah, well, we're it's a little bit difficult being remote. Staff are, as you said, doing the Herculean effort and pulling their weight. We're liaising with our elected officials and communities to make sure that, you know, the questions and concerns get to staff. And then, yeah, those of us that sit on different committees have been managing or passing on the communication that way. So I co-chair a couple of other of the ICC or the community advisory committees, and I have asked for us, you know, just to have phone updates and not make staff manage a full meeting right now. Just especially like for community use of schools, they're a little short-staffed on that facility side anyway. And I know that their staff there are putting in 12 hours a day. So we've been trying to spare those sorts of things and then just keep our members up to date when they have questions or they reach out. I think, yeah, the big pieces from outside of special education concerns were the food security and nutrition pieces and well-being. And we've been sharing those out to, well, I have, and I know other trustees have, sharing those out to our MPs, MPPs and city councillors, sharing resources to make sure that we're on the same page, letting them know if they have families contacting them about school and things like that. You know, what are the routes for connection? Like, having families make sure they contact the principal at their school, so their information is up to date, so they get what they need. I will say staff is doing a fantastic effort considering the lack of clear direction coming from the province. It is a bit frustrating. Sometimes we have a meeting in the afternoon that comes after our chair and our director have had a meeting with the provincial staff, and then the Minister of Education gets on the news and tells something else. So we're not getting advance notice. Boards aren't getting advance notice of the announcements that are coming. The decision to extend the school closures and the emergency, we didn't get a heads up about that. So yeah, from the board side, the staffing budget went ahead. And that was sort of the big piece. We made our school level staffing budgetary decisions and passed them at board so that hiring can go ahead for the fall. But those projections might change depending. Toronto is a big immigration hub. A lot of our student population and fluctuation is based on people moving in and out of the city. And that is, we assume that's going to be impacted coming up and over the summer. So it may change our student projections for the fall and what our staffing models look like in individual schools. So there might be some changes coming there. We haven't had things, budgetary pieces like GSNs, like the grants for student need, have been delayed. So we would have expected them by now. Other decisions like capital projects, so our requests for money for new builds and things like that, those we expected those in February or early March, and we haven't heard about those yet either. So everything is delayed at the moment.
Great. I think Alexander also wanted to speak. Sorry, were you finished, Michelle? Or
did, yeah, was there anything? That's it for me.
Alexandra, I think you're next.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. So Michelle covered some of the ministry side stuff, and I just wanted to touch on the budget, because as we were looking at our budget earlier this year, again, the TDSB is in a very tight, one of the worst positions yet that I've ever seen in terms of the gap that we need to fill to ensure that our students with special education needs get what they're supposed to be getting. Last year it was a little over 30, almost 40 million, 30 some odd million, 39. This year we're looking at potentially 53 million. So in the last 6 years since I've been a trustee, there's been, it's gone from $16 million gap up to $53 million gap. This is hugely concerning for me. And we should all be concerned about it. And I don't know what will happen in terms of the budget, because as Michelle pointed out, we have no information and we should be working on this by now. So I'm going to have to work with Craig Snyder and with all of our staff to make sure that we can get that information out to SEAC members and to the public at large as soon as possible. One of the key resources that we have is our question and answer section on our website. I'm not sure, maybe Kathy can help me understand if we've got a link to it on our SEAC webpage. I haven't looked at it, but it would be useful to have that link very clearly presented so that anyone going on that website could take a look at it. We've got a lot of questions that have come forward. Many of them, when they came forward, did not have immediate answers, and we've had to either look to the ministry for those answers or come up with our own. But they aren't always readily available. And then the third thing, and this is one that I want everyone to consider, is that tomorrow at our Committee of the Whole meeting, which you can all join again electronically, the report coming forward to us is on our secondary school review, which also includes the new policy for specialized schools and programs in our schools, in our secondary schools. And this is a concern for me because we are proceeding with it. The timelines will be changed, but at this particular point in time, I'm wondering if anybody would be interested in focusing on what we're going to be doing with our specialized schools and programs. I'm sure that everyone that I've spoken to has said, absolutely not. I can't believe it. So I don't know exactly what the meeting is going to, how that's going to be resolved tomorrow, but I'm going to be making a very strong recommendation, if not bringing a motion, to put the brakes on this until we have a much clearer idea of where we're going with this COVID-19 crisis and when our kids are actually going to be back in school. This makes no sense that we're focusing on developing a new policy when we've already identified that there were 20 some odd thousand people who could not connect with us because they either didn't have a device or they didn't have internet. So the equity issue here is enormous from where I stand. And I just want people to be aware, if they do want to join that meeting tomorrow, that they can join us and listen in. I think it's very important that people do have that opportunity.
Alexander, it's Nora. Aileen was asking for a few more details about the policy that was going forward.
Details?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the policy, there's a draft policy available on our website now. So
right.
If you go to that, you can find what that policy says. But the concern is that people are being asked to join through video conferencing or through telephone conferencing to provide their feedback on that. But I don't think that people right at this point really actually care about it. I, as a member of the Governance and Policy Committee, I don't care. I would prefer to focus on ensuring that our kids have everything they need right now. And the last thing I want to be thinking about is developing a new policy. We can go forward with what we have until we're in a much better, sounder place. And I don't know how long that's going to be. That might not be until September or even beyond that. So to develop a new policy when you're not engaging everyone, to me, goes against our TDSB's own policies and own drive for equity and access. Aline, if you want, I can send you the link to the specialized program policy and you can check it over. And that's my report.
Okay. So just for the committee's information, Diane and I did participate in a virtual meeting about the specialized school policy. So it had to Alexander's comment, it had a smaller group of consultation than otherwise would have happened had COVID not occurred. I too have concerns about specialized programs, mostly because a large number of them would be considered, in my opinion, elitist, because they're based on a certain level of academic performance and not so much based on a student's area of interest and study. So those were some of my comments, is that if you were a student who wanted to pursue the arts, but you weren't spectacularly talented at it, but you were certainly more motivated by than anything else, it wasn't really something you would be accepted into. So I think there are some, people should take a look, because there are some significant changes about the difference between a district arts program and a local arts program, which is very different than what currently happens now. Is there anybody else? Do we have any other reports from trustees?
I don't know if Melissa wanted to say something, because you have a couple of X's beside
your name. Okay.
I don't know if it's just something that you're putting beside your comment, or if that's enough. But you have an X beside all of your comments. So I'm not sure if you wanted to talk or if the comments were sufficient. Assume the she's unmuting, okay.
Yeah, she's asking about a motion.
Yeah, here it goes. She's trying to get in.
Hi, sorry, I thought moving my mouse would work, but I had to click my mouse. I was wondering about what Alexander was talking about, and it does seem fairly outrageous that this transformative change premised on broad public consultation and input would proceed in this environment. I'm not even really sure how TDSB staff can pay full attention to these significant changes, given what we're hearing about the all-consuming nature of trying to deliver education, very core, minimal, basic education in these difficult times. And I think we can all be fairly realistic in agreeing that it's highly unlikely that school will resume this year. And so the huge consuming staff focus, which we assume is taking place, is all directed on delivering very basic education needs. I don't really see how the board can, I'm sorry to say, in good faith, proceed with these other changes without the input. So I'm wondering, how can we help Alexander, and would it help to start with a motion from SEAC?
Was that a question for me? Sorry.
I believe, yes. Alexander, it was a question to you. Sorry. Yes, Alexander.
The report that we'll be considering tomorrow is already posted. I'm going to make sure that everybody gets it so that they can take a look at it. It's quite a long report. I think at this point that tomorrow's meeting, there may very well be a motion put on the floor to put the brakes on this until we are in a better place, and to amend the timeline. Now, I know that that is a plan of staff to amend the timeline and to extend it, but they want to continue, from my understanding, with the consultations and providing reports to trustees. But, you know, as I pointed out, and as if other people have, who's my, I just can't wrap my mind on my, my senses around doing this at this point. And again, if SEAC wishes to make a motion to that effect, they can. It probably wouldn't get to the board in time. Well, it might get to the board, but I think we'll see what happens tomorrow, and then I can always come back and inform you again.
Kathy, if I can jump in, that was going to be my point. I think I think Michelle and Alexander, as our trustee reps, are hearing the feedback or reading it in the chat line. The issue with the motion is the timing. It is going to committee of the whole, I believe, is the meeting tomorrow. So I think the timing of getting a SEAC motion to the board would be after the fact. But hearing your Michelle and Alexander can share the ideas, and also anybody on the committee can do the share their comments online as well. I'm just putting that out there as another option.
Jean-Paul, was it just a comment you had, or were you looking for an answer from Michelle?
Oh, sorry, I unmuted myself the wrong way. This is Melissa again. If I could just say, I'm very connected to very large school communities, some of which are students without special education needs. Our school has 450 students with identified learning disabilities, same number with gifted students, many 2E. So it's a special education issue, but it goes beyond that. And I can tell you that a very active parent community in our school and schools with which we have connections are entirely focused at this point in how to support parents and students, and in particular, students and families in need and with challenges. So people who would normally engage on these kinds of issues and have been following them, not only are not engaged in following that type of issue, but I have to say, I think very strongly react that it's very inappropriate for the board to be pushing ahead on those changes, which have already been perceived as not having sufficient consultation. There have been questions about how much input is really sought and how much input parents can have. So I think proceeding at a brisk pace to confirm any of these changes when clearly people won't participate would be very negatively received and perceived by people. So if the trustees could pass that on, that would be much appreciated.
Okay, is there, so now it sounds as though we're leaving it with Michelle and Alexander to take forward for tomorrow. And
yes, sorry, Nora, I've just posted in the chat, I posted the report. I don't know if people can access it.
So the link's in the chat?
Yeah.
Great. Okay, perfect. It's also on the board's website. We will leave it with Michelle and Alexander to take forward tomorrow. And then I'm assuming you'll bring that back for a report next month. Because traditionally, had COVID not happened, we would actually hopefully have been hearing more about that tonight, actually, ironically. So thank you very much for representing our views on that for tomorrow. And is there anybody else that has a report? I think not. Then I guess we're in adjournment. So do we have to have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
This is the earliest meeting we've ever had.
I know. Great. Okay. Motion to adjourn. Do we have a seconder? Thank you, Paul. And once again, thank you so much to staff for all your late nights and hard work. You can see through the comments that people are really appreciative of everything you're trying to do to reach all of our students. So
thanks everyone. We really do appreciate your support.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay. And everybody be well and see you next month.
Take care.
Be well and stay connected.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Diane and Nora, that was great.
Okay, oh, yeah, you guys are all amazing. It worked well.
No, I think it was a great format. And I mean, David was emailing me and I was posting for him. So I think, you know, that worked out okay as well.
Yeah, everybody got to speak. Yeah. That was good meeting. It was on time. Everybody got their stuff out and I think it was really well. So thank you all. Thank you very much, Leanne, for organizing it and making this happen. It's good.
And I imagine our next and possibly two next may be the same format. So
yeah, most likely. Okay.
I think it works out well. Anyways.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.